Welcome back, friends. We're talking about Our Lady, her titles of the Litany of Loretto, with a particular focus on those dealing with her motherhood. So, the Litany of Loretto was named after the shrine of Our Lady of Loretto in Italy, and it emerged in the late Middle Ages, with its earliest documented use tied to the shrine by the mid 16th century, 1500s, mid 1500s. Its origins are somewhat murky, but it's believed to have evolved from the earlier medieval rhymed litanies, possibly influenced by Eastern Marian devotion like the hymnos Akathistos. Unlike older liturgies, litanies such as the Litany of All Saints, it focuses solely on invocational praises of the Virgin Mary without petitions or narrative elements. And that is kind of different with this litany. The litany gained prominence at Loretto, a major pilgrimage site where it was sung as early as 1558. It was officially approved by Pope Sixtus V in 1587, who suppressed other Marian litanies for public use, cementing its status as the Church's primary Marian litany. Its spread was fueled by pilgrims returning from Loretto, carrying the prayer across Europe. The earliest known printed version from 1558 in Dillingen, Germany, by St. Peter Cassinus, closely resembles today's text. Over time, popes enriched it with new titles: Queen of the Most Holy Rosary in 1675, Queen Conceived Without Original Sin, 1883, Mother of Good Counsel, 1903, Queen of Peace, 1917, and well, I'll continue. Queen Assumed into Heaven, 1850, Mother of the Church, 1980, Queen of Families, 1995. I mean, Queen of Peace in 1917. You can see what's on the Pope's mind. Or Queen Conceived Without Original Sin, 1883. That'd be the Immaculate Conception doctrine.
And then was the assumption is in 1950, right?
That's right. 1950 is right. That's right. The indulgence. Do we have any comment there? Because we're about to go
No,
into
I think that
indulgence.
that's just an interesting element that, I guess the only comment that I would have to make about that is that she is 100% praiseworthy. Right, so that and the beauty of that historical progression of additions to her litany only shows that in every time and in every generation she responds to, I mean, mightily to a new need. And at that moment when we recognize her goodness, it's only appropriate to bring that aspect of her personality into the litany as a way of, because really this litany is about getting to know her. Right. I mean, we're being introduced to her through a myriad of different facets. And when another opportunity like that presents itself, it's very beautiful that the church again provides us that opportunity to better love her, because the more that we know her and the more that we understand her virtues, the better we can know her and the more we will love her.
That's very true. That's very true. Partial indulgences. There were popular and confusing topic of indulgences, and so let us look at it a little bit, because this litany is an indulgence. I used that term earlier. It's an indulgence prayer. So I'm reading straight from the Magisterium. A partial indulgence is granted to the faithful who devoutly recite the Litany of Loretto. This was reaffirmed in the Enchiridion Indulgentiarum, Handbook of Indulgences of 1968, which specifies the reciting approved liturgies, including the Litany of Loretto. Remits some to portion, so partial, it remits some. Not total. Some temporal punishment due to sin, provided the recitation is pious and meets the usual conditions, that is, being in a state of grace. I mean, that's that. The exact amount of remission depends on the individual's disposition and the church's treasury of merit. So it's not a fixed time as in older formulations. Historical plenary indulgences, earlier records indicate more specific grants. Pope Pius VII, 1800 to 1823, reportedly attached a plenary indulgence to the daily reception of the Litany of Loretto, applicable on five major Marian feasts: the Immaculate Conception, December 8th, the Nativity of Mary, September 8th, the Annunciation, March 25th, the Purification, February 2nd, and the Assumption, August 15th. To gain this plenary indulgence, the usual conditions apply: confession, a communion, prayer for the Pope's intentions, and detachment from sin. Awesome. You have to really desire to be in a state of grace. Additionally, Pius VII granted a partial indulgence of 300 days, going back to that prior way of measuring, for each recitation, a measure from pre-1968 indulgence norms when time-based remissions were common. But even so, I included that, even include the days, just to show a particular mindset of the church, right? The church is in some definite synonymous with our Lord, so that's the train of thought. These indulgences reflect the church's aim to foster devotion to Mary. Post-Vatican II, the focus shifted from time-specific to partial plenary categories, and while plenary indulgences tied to specific feasts would require a current papal decree to be universally applicable, none has been widely publicized recently, though local bishops might grant them for special occasions. And that's true. You often see bishops doing that for this various reasons. So, to summarize, an indulgence doesn't forgive sins. Only the sacrament of reconciliation does that. But it reduces the temporal consequences of already forgiven sins. That's why confession's part of the package. By drawing on Christ's merits, it's always going to come back to Christ and the saints' intercession, especially Mary's in this particular place with with Loretto.
Yeah, indulgences are just an enormous gift that are given to us. I mean, you think about a loving parent who, a child breaks a lamp and the lamp is broken and it needs to be replaced. And a wise parent will allow their child to engage in some action, which is reparative, right, of that broken lamp. But a parent who is also wise can recognize when the child is showing a true remorse for what they have done, right? And may diminish the amount of effort that the child has to make or put forth to repair that lamp. If they show no remorse whatsoever, fine, you will definitely pay for the entire lamp, right? But if there are copious tears and much sorrow, it's very likely that a parent will say, okay, you can give me a hug. Right. And then the lamp will be repaired. And the mother will take care of that, or the father will take care of that. And indulgences are very much the same way. There are some kids who have to learn to have sorrow for the broken lamp by having to work hard and paying off the entire amount. Right. But we don't want to be that child. The child says they're sorry, right? But it takes a long time to pay off that debt. But the church, in her wisdom, gives us that opportunity. If we truly are remorseful, our Lord is very content to diminish the time or the effort that we have to put forward to make a reparation for the wrongs that we've done. And what's really even more beautiful, I think, about this case is that not only can we make reparations for our own self, But we can offer that reparative action into what would be considered the economy of salvation, and we can let Our Lady decide exactly where that reparation is most needed. So, I think it goes to that line of Saint Paul where he says, "I take up in my own flesh what is lacking in the suffering of Christ," right? And that's not to say that in any way, shape, or form that the crucifixion or that his passion and death could have had any lack, but for the fact that he let the door open just a little bit so that we could, as a gift to our dignity, that he allows us to share in creating that economy of salvation for the good of the whole church.
That's right. It is a shocking. I'm glad that is one of those great quotes of Paul that's shocking to the ears. You know, I'm making up in myself what was lacking in his sacrifice. It's a shocking statement, and so you have to really enter in. It's in that same level as all generations are going to call me blessed. That's kind of a very bold statement, and yes, you got straight to the heart of the matter there with Paul. Is that our blessed Lord? What is lacking is my own, yes, my own offering it up. The very venerable and well-worn Catholic phrase, offer it up. It's my own personal participation, which may be lacking, right? It's certainly not a deficiency of our blessed Lord's, which we all know, which we all know. Okay, my friends, let us pick
And it's
up.
sort of like, you can have a beautiful day, right? And you can be sitting outside on the grass, but you can elevate that day by having a beautiful picnic table that's spread with a lovely linen tablecloth and, beautiful crystal place settings. I mean, right. I mean, nothing was lacking in the beauty of the day and the grass upon which to sit. There's no one can say, "Well, that's terrible. I didn't get everything I needed." No, you did. But our Lord allows us by entering into that passion with him to make things even more beautiful, more becoming, because all of these things that we offer into the treasury of the church are, I mean, I guess you could look at it kind of like also another little analogy would be the Vatican Museum, right? I mean, all of those things that are a storehouse, a treasury of beautiful things that have been gathered into one place as a gift to all mankind to be able to go and see these beautiful treasures, right? I mean, they don't necessarily belong to her. She didn't make all of them, but she is the one who brings them together and then is able to distribute that beauty in a more easier manner for the betterment of all who see it.
Very nice. Yes. Yes, indeed. All right, my friends. Till the next time. Fides et ratio.